going to help me pass them out? Okay, good, thanks. Let me start off by making an announcement that Corey's asked me to make. And this would be for parents and grandparents who have children grades 3 through 12. The LTC meeting is at 4:30. And if you're new to the congregation here, LTC is Leadership Training for Christ. And how many of us have said somewhere, sometime, I wish when I was younger I'd had some training to know how to do, learn how to do this, and I wouldn't be afraid to get up in front of people and wouldn't be afraid to do this? Well, maybe you didn't have that opportunity, but your young people do, and if you have a child or a grandchild, I would encourage you to strongly encourage them to be a part of this Leadership Training for Christ. It's an opportunity for kids grades 3 through 12 to learn how to apply their skills in church and develop new ones, an opportunity to develop some new friends. And maybe grandparents more than anybody else know the value of having good Christian friends. And they develop this through team activities. And even if you participated in other LTC conventions somewhere, you're encouraged to come to this meeting, as it may operate differently from some of the other LTCs that you have known about in other places. So just a word of encouragement. We got lots of young folks that fall into that category, so let's encourage all of them to be a part of that. Did we run out?
They're all out.
Did anybody not have one? Okay. Tyrone, have you got an extra one? Okay, here's one extra. How many more we need? Okay, we got one. Okay, that was 300 of them. I know there's not 300 people here today, but anyway, 300 last week and this week. Somebody's got to bring them back. I know what happened. Be opening your Bibles to Romans chapter 1. In Romans chapter 1, verse 17 is the theme for the book of Romans. And I'm going to say that if we really understood Romans chapter 1, verse 17 and all of its implications, it would solve most of the problems we have in our life. Now, that sounds like a big statement, but I'm telling you it's true. For one thing, it would solve problems of self-righteousness. And that nobody thinks that they're self-righteous. Okay? Let's get that real plain. Nobody would admit. There are some sins that most of us would admit to. We might call it by a different name. You know, I don't steal, but I have taken some things that didn't belong to me rightfully. And I don't cheat, but I have fudged a little bit from time to time. So there are some of these sins that we'll admit to, but I don't know that I hear very many people admitting to being self-righteous. That's a really tough one. But it may be one of the most prominent sins in the Lord's church. And we always look at somebody else as being self-righteous. But if we really understood in verse 17, 16, picking up the sentence, the thought, for I'm not ashamed of the gospel because it's God's power to salvation to everyone who believes, first to the Jew and then to the Gentile. For in the gospel, a righteousness from God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last, just as it is written, the just by faith will live. And if we really understood that and didn't forget what it meant, then we wouldn't be arrogant. We wouldn't be self-righteous. We wouldn't be afraid. Not if we had that righteousness and were recipients of that righteousness. We wouldn't be afraid of our salvation. We wouldn't be afraid of dying. Now, don't tell me that wouldn't change some lives. It changed your life and it changed my life. If it honestly were true that we weren't afraid of dying, and if it honestly were true that we were confident about our position with God, so that if I were to die at any moment, that would be perfectly fine. That'd change our whole outlook on life, wouldn't it? And so it would take away uncertainty. It would take away insecurity. It would provide a completely different basis for relationships. The basis for relationships now is, what do you do for me? How do you make me feel? How pretty are you? What do you provide for me? Do you make me laugh? Do you make me do this? We got, and there are some people that we seek a relationship with and others that we don't at all seek a relationship with. It would change that. It would change our attitude about how we judge other people. We'd be a lot less judgmental if we really understood that. And what it is that I'm saying, that we understand, is how we're made righteous. It makes all the difference in the world, how we're made righteous. It would give us a purpose in life that we've never had before. And so we wouldn't be nearly as prone to discouragement in our life, or becoming unhappy with our lot in life, or being discontent. I'm saying that if we really understood the concept right there in that verse, it would change everything about our lives. And that's our goal in this series of lessons, is that we're going to look at what this means to the best of my ability to teach it, that I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for in the gospel a righteousness from God. And that's the key phrase right there. A righteousness from God is revealed. You see, because there's two ways to be saved. There's two ways to be made righteous. One of them is you do it. You're good. You're good enough. And you keep law good enough to go to heaven. And that's the way the vast, vast majority of the world is living. That encompasses whole religious systems. And I bring this up from time to time because it's in the headlines. That is what Islam is. It is based around a law. That's why people are so very upset about a book being burned, because it is about a law. They don't have a savior. In their religion, they don't need a savior. You just are good enough. And who gets to determine what good enough is? Me and my friends. You understand? I get to determine that. And what I think is good enough may not be what you think is good enough. And so we have problems. And the world has lots and lots of problems in religion, and so people have said, why don't we just throw religion out and the world will be a whole lot better off? Well, there's a sense in which that's not completely untrue. If by religion we mean all of what we see today, there are, as I said, two ways to be saved. Romans chapter 1, verse 18 through chapter 3, verse 20. Talks about one of those ways. And we're going to work that way over. And you're going to be glad to get out of this section when we finally get out of it. Kind of like the Prodigal God series. You know, I don't know if you're tired of that or not, but I can't help myself, okay? I just love it, and I got one more lesson, okay? Give me one more after today, okay? Because this is a meaningful study to me, and okay, I won't preach about that. But anyway, a preacher, unlike somebody who teaches in a Christian school, doesn't get to stay on a topic very long. You have to hit it and move, hit it and move, hit it and move. And so a few times when you run across something that's really meaningful to you, you know, I might be wearing you out. I don't know. But anyway, it's meaningful to me, so I'm going to stay here until I want to move on, which will be another week. So I hope that you're benefiting something from it. But we're going to talk a lot about law, because I'm really convinced that we haven't talked enough about law. We don't understand law. We understand some things about law, but there's some things that we need to understand about if I appeal to law for my salvation. What does that mean? And it's going to have some really serious implications. And we talk about things like we hear people say, if so-and-so, if anybody was ever good enough to go to heaven, then my grandma was. Right? And what's the problem with that? Nobody has ever been good enough to go to heaven. And if that's the basis that your grandma is going to stand before God and be judged on how good she is, I have some really sad news for you. You don't get into heaven because you're better than somebody else. That's not how you get your righteousness. And we have got to understand that. And it will change your life. And some people, like Pharisees, don't like it because it makes us feel better than other people. We judge ourselves by others, and we always pick, whenever you're going to compare yourself with other people, guess what kind of person you pick to compare yourself to? You pick somebody that's a little lower than you are, that ought to be higher than you are, right? That's why preacher's kids have such a hard time. Because people always pick them to compare their kids to. Well, look at the preacher's kids. You know, they do so-and-so. And that makes you feel better. Right? We always pick somebody that we perceive, we find some fault with them, and we pick them to compare ourselves with, and we're trying to make ourselves look better. You see, if my righteousness is based on my doing and my deeds, then I've got to come up somehow in the top 10%, because we all know God's grading on the curve, right? Only the top 10% are going to get in heaven. And how am I going to get in the top 10%? Well, there's two ways I can do it. One of them, I can really, really, really be that good. Top 10% of all the people who ever live, that's a pretty high bar, isn't it? Not just the people who are living now. That's one way I can get there under a legal system. The other way is I can take some of those people that look like they're in the top 10% and I can find fault with them and I can criticize them and bring them down. And so I feel like I'm elevating myself. But I'm really not. But it feels like I am. And so we criticize one another. And Paul will say, be careful when you bite and devour one another, because you might be consumed. You might eat each other up. Don't you get tired of being criticized? And if that criticism comes from somebody who ought to be on your side, that makes it that much worse, doesn't it? And so there are lots and lots of practical. Everything, all the teaching in the Bible is really, really practical. And this is as practical as it gets. It's going to be some doctrinal principles. But when we apply these to our life, they really, really make a difference in our attitude about life. If you ever get to the point that you really do understand that your righteousness is a gift from God, in the gospel, therein, in the gospel, a righteousness from God is revealed. Not a righteousness from you, a righteousness from God. He starts out in the beginning of the book telling us what this whole book's going to be about. And so I say, if you understand Romans 1:17 and you really understand it, then you've got the message that he wants to give you. But it's not that simple. We can't just say it and it be that meaningful in our life. We have to really understand it, and to understand it, we have to wrestle some with the baggage that we bring, because we all bring some baggage, whether we understand it or not. We all bring some baggage to this study. And it came from our grandmas and grandpas and mamas and daddies and preachers and friends and teachers and all those people who had influence in our life. They said some things along the way that we picked up and made a part of our reasoning process, and it's just part and parcel of how we think and how we arrive at conclusions and some suppositions that we make, and we arrive at some conclusions and we accept some things as truth that may not be totally all the way home. There may be more to add to it. I read somewhere this week that a conclusion is when you got tired of thinking. That's kind of true, isn't it? Because we've drawn conclusions before that something happened later in our life that caused us to go back and rethink that. And the conclusion that we draw the second time is a little bit different than that first one, right? Maybe, hopefully, deeper, a layer deeper. But sometimes considerably different than a conclusion that we've drawn before. So I want to start out by asking a question. And I'm going to ask this question a bunch of times. Actually, I'm going to remind you of it. Romans 1:18 through 3:20 is talking about how a man tries to be righteous by law, by keeping law. We'll talk about what law here in a little while. Just how a man tries to be righteous by keeping law. Or if you want to say it, how a man tries to be righteous by being good. You ever heard somebody say, I just can't live it. I see that, but I just can't live it. That's right. You can't. Let's go ahead and lay that out now. If by living it you mean be good enough, you can't be. And boy, if we ever get to the point that we accept that and then we understand, that's okay because that's not the way you're made righteous, then that's going to take lots of pressure off of you. That if you understand, you don't have to be good enough to go to heaven. Boy, wouldn't that be a good thing to know? For those of us who've been trying and trying and trying, and we just get a little quieter because in our heart of hearts we know we're not good enough. Here's the question that I want to ask you. And I want you to think about it before you answer it. But I want every one of you to answer it. If Jesus Christ had never come to this earth, get that in your mind, okay? If Jesus had never come to this earth, there would be no Bible, no New Testament, there would be no gospel, there would be no cross, there would be no church, there would be no Lord's Supper, there would be no baptism, there would be none of those things. If Jesus Christ had never come to this earth, would man be lost or would he be saved? Now, it's really, really important how you answer that and that you answer that, because most of us don't want to answer that question. You know what we will say in answer to it? God is love. And he's going to take care of all that. But that, while that's true that God is love, that doesn't answer the question. Let's lead up to it. Are there going to be any people who are lost when judgment day comes? Are there going to be any people who are lost? This is yes. Yes, there are, right? In fact, Jesus said the way that leads to destruction is what? It's broad and many there are that will enter in thereat. Many. So most will be lost. What separates who will be lost and who won't be lost? What's the dividing line? What is the determining factor of who's lost and who's not lost? The righteous will go to heaven, the unrighteous will go to hell. Is that right? This is yes. If Jesus Christ had never come to this earth, would man be lost or would he be saved? But whether they knew or not is not my question. My question is, now, this is a hard thing. And we're starting out with a hard one. And we're going to come back up and bump against this question a bunch of times in this first section right here. Jesus said, "The Son of Man has come to seek and save," finish it out for me, "that which was lost." That's what he said, didn't he? If that's not true, if man without Jesus Christ would be okay, why would you ever take the gospel to him? You just want to improve his life on this earth? Is that what the gospel is about? Why would you take the gospel to him if he's okay without it? Now you tell me that. I'm telling you, if a person is okay apart from Christ, I'm going to beg you to not take the gospel to him. Because what if he hears it and rejects it? What just happened to him? I mean, we'll agree with that, right? If a person hears the gospel and he rejects that message, then he's lost. And we've always... And I'm going to say some things, and I'm saying this from my standpoint, okay? It may or may not be yours. We've always said the reason that a person is lost is because he hasn't obeyed the gospel. Or he hasn't heard the gospel. And I'm going to say to you, I don't believe that. I used to believe that because it's what I heard all my life growing up. The reason that a person is lost is because he hadn't been baptized or he hadn't heard the gospel or he hasn't responded to the gospel or something akin to that. And I used to think that was right. I don't think that's right anymore. Because I believe that if the gospel had never been preached, man's lost. And if that's true, then the gospel has nothing to do with the man being lost. Are you still with me? Even if your heart's not, is your head with me? This is one of those things where your head comes and you have to really wrestle with this to get your heart there. But I'm telling you, part of the difficulty that we experience in the Lord's church, and particularly with the lack of evangelism, is because we really don't believe a person's lost without Jesus Christ. And therefore, we just have this little platitude that says God is love and God's going to take care of folks like that who've never heard the gospel. And if that's true, and our implication is they're going to be okay, then why would you take the gospel to them? Huh? Don't take the gospel to them. They're better off. If they're okay without it, don't take the gospel to them. What do you hope to accomplish by taking the gospel to them? If you think they're okay without it, you're not going to save them. They're already saved. Are you with me? I'm telling you, it's important how you answer this question. You're not going to progress. You're not going to understand how God makes people righteous until you come to grips with that question. And you understand that apart from the gospel and apart from Jesus Christ, man is lost. And when I say man, let me say this one time, and I'll probably say it about 8 or 10, but I'll say it one time. When I say man, I'm talking about anybody of sufficient age and mentality to be held accountable for their actions. Okay? That's who I'm talking about. I'm not talking about infant children. I'm talking about somebody that is accountable, responsible for their own actions. And if we don't understand that that person is lost, we have no real impetus to take the gospel to them. And if they're, in fact, not lost, don't take the gospel to them. They don't need it. They're okay with that. All you're going to do is what? Just improve the quality of their life? Now, I know that it's a hard thing to say. that a person who's, what about a person who's never had a chance to hear the gospel? You see, we get into a discussion then, some people say, well, God owes everybody the opportunity to hear the gospel. No, he does not. God created you in a perfect relationship with himself. There was no sin when you came into this world to separate you from God. You deliberately, willfully chose to sin, and you separate your sins and your iniquities have separated you from God. You did that to yourself. And consequently, you're separated from God. And so we're going to be talking about how you got separated and really look into this and how God's going to judge a person. Does it ever bother you how God's going to judge a person who's never had a chance to hear the gospel? Has that ever bothered you any? Yeah, and you said what? Well, God is love, didn't we? And God's going to take care of that. And so we just dismiss that from our minds. That doesn't answer the question. Because, you see, there's another side of God that we don't talk as much about. God is love. The Bible says that at least twice, specifically. John does, doesn't he? But there's another side of God that we also have to factor into this. God is what? Righteous. God is righteous. And God's righteousness demands and requires certain things. Just for instance, God's righteousness keeps him from being able to say, whenever you stand before him and he looks at you and he says, you were a good dad or you were a good mom and you gave money to people and you did this and you attended church and you did this. You're just better than most folks, so I'm going to let you in. You've got some sin there, but it wasn't too much. You know, in comparison with most folks, it wasn't much. So I'm going to let you into heaven. God's righteousness cannot allow that. Let me give you a real kicker here, okay? And we're setting the stage for our understanding here. When you stand before God, if you have one single sin that is on your account, God cannot let you into heaven because God is righteous. There will not ever be one single sin that is committed in this world that is not penalized with the proper penalty. And the wages of sin is death. There won't ever be one single sin that is not punished by death. Every single one of them will be. There won't be one that slips through the cracks. This will set the stage for everything that we're going to study. And these are just real basic definitions. We will elaborate on some of them additionally. And I shouldn't have handed this out to you. Is it not on? Yeah, it's on. Because that by handing it out, I've kind of killed some of the feedback that I would get. Don't look at it, all right? What is a law? Okay, every one of you looked down, didn't you? Okay, it's a set of rules, right? What is the purpose of law? What does law accomplish? Why do we have laws? Just in general. We're not talking about any particular law. Why do we have laws?
Set up order.
Set up order? How does it set up order? It what? Controls behavior. By doing what? By limiting what? Freedom. It's like a fence, right? As long as you stay on this side of the fence, everything's cool, copacetic. But if you step over the fence, then you're in dangerous territory. You've done something wrong, right? And so laws set fences. And there are good laws and bad laws. Good laws are set in the right place where truly it is wrong on one side and right on the other. There are different purposes. We have laws for, you know, just keeping peace, and we have laws for driving down the road and so forth. We're going to eventually get this thing to moral law, right and wrong kind of laws. Countries make laws to control people, right? That's kind of a negative way to say it. But they set boundaries for right behavior. That's what laws do. And they say, as long as you don't exceed this, or as long as you don't step over here, everything is good. Are laws good or bad? Yeah, that's right. We're going to talk about how they're good and how they're bad. But they're good, okay? You don't want to live where there's no law. In fact, I question whether or not it's possible to live where there's no law. Because if there are no stated laws, then the law of survival of the fittest kicks in. If you're the quickest and the fastest and got the biggest gun and can whatever, you know, well, then you win until somebody who's bigger, faster, got a bigger gun comes along. So there are laws that kick in here. But in civilized places, then we have laws that hopefully are good laws. And if they're not good laws, then society pays. And so we really want to have good laws. Where do those laws come from? How, when you go to other countries, they have laws that are very similar to ours. Where do they all come from? Well, we're going to talk some about that. And how did we get it, and what laws exist? But law is a good thing, but it's not an end-all. There are some shortcomings of law that we're going to talk about. There are some things that law can do, and there are some things that law can't do. And sometimes we appeal to law for something that law can't do. Pardon? No, that's all right. Cannot. So there are some things that law cannot do, cannot accomplish. There are some things in life that law was not intended to accomplish. Okay? And sometimes we take law out of its context and try to make it do something that it was never intended to do. And that's actually what we're going to be looking at here in 1:18 to 3:20. It's when we start appealing to law for our righteousness, then we're doing something that God never intended law to accomplish. Okay, sin. What is sin? Well, sin is to step over the fence of law. Right? You just went over the boundary. And I've written down four specific passages that address what sin is. Sin is, the Greek word means to miss the mark, or at least one of them does. The word, that would be the word that's translated sin. The word that's translated transgression means to go beyond. But to miss the mark, behavior that's contrary to God, His will, and His nature. And then I've given you four specific New Testament verses. 1 John 3:4 says, transgression of God's law. sin. James 4:17, whoever knows do good and doesn't do it, to him it's what? Sin. So it's refusal to do good. Romans 14:23, whatsoever is not of faith is sin. 1 John 5:17, all unrighteousness is sin. So what is things that are not consistent with God's righteousness? So that's sin. We're going to talk more about sin. The gospel. What is the gospel? Now, I hope you know, those of you who've been here for a little while, I hope you know what the definition of the gospel is. Because we just had a series not long ago entitled, what? The True Gospel. And we gave that definition over and over and over and over and over dozens of times. The gospel is the good news that God's righteousness is available by grace through faith apart from works of law. Every single one of those phrases is important that you understand. It is God's righteousness that's available. It's not your righteousness. It's God's righteousness that is available by grace. That means it's a free gift. Through faith, that means that's how you access it. Apart from works of law. You don't earn part of your salvation and be given part of your righteousness and earn part of your righteousness. It's not a combination. And I'm afraid that too many of us have made it a combination. And that means we've come a ways, because there are people who believe that righteousness is totally a matter of keeping law. We just use an illustration of that. Islam would be an example of that. But we have a Savior, right? And so some of us have come further down the road than believing that we are going to be good enough to go to heaven and we can earn our righteousness. So we've said, well, you know, God provides this much of our righteousness, and then we've got to provide this much of our righteousness. Or we'll start out and say, I can only be this much righteous right here, and God, it takes the rest, God's righteousness to bring me up to here. And so we've made our righteousness be partly law and partly by grace. And we're wrong. And I hope to take that away from you. And that's really my job. That's really my aim in this class. Is to help us understand Romans chapter 1, verse 17. I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for therein a righteousness, what? From God is made known. Not from law. Two ways to be made righteous. And we've kind of made a hybrid system, some of us have. Partly by law and partly by grace. So, the gospel. Justification. Let me give you, it means, and we talked about that, by the way, had a series of lessons that we used some of those 18-wheeler words, you remember? Justification was one of them. And it was the courtroom scene. Remember, we talked about different words that had a setting. One of them was a slave market. One of them was a courtroom scene. One of them was the altar and the sacrifice. You remember those words? Go ahead and say yes, whether you do or not. All right, make me feel better, all right? If you don't, well, you can get that series of lessons, whatever. But this word, justification, is the courtroom scene. And it means you're standing before the judge, and you are dead dog guilty. You know it, and everybody else knows it. And you're just waiting for the pronouncement of the sentence, because it's a foregone conclusion that you're guilty. And when the gavel comes down, the judge says, not guilty. And you say, what? Not guilty. That's what justification is. To be pronounced not guilty. And justification, a little homespun way to remember what justification is, a little play on the word, just as if I'd never sinned before. Justification. How would you like, what would it be worth to you to know that today, in God's eyes, He looks at you just as if you had never sinned before? What would you pay for that? Wow. Justification. not guilty. You are guilty, and I am too. But justification enables God to say, not guilty. Boy, that's a better deal than you being good. You hear me? That's a better deal. You better take that deal. Why in the world would the Pharisees not take that deal? Huh? Because they felt like they weren't guilty anyway. They had self-righteousness. They had their own righteousness. And they liked their righteousness better than they liked God's righteousness. Can you imagine that? Yes, ma'am. Okay, when we get there, I'll pick that up. Okay? No, really, and I appreciate you asking. I appreciate you asking because, and there's going to be several times. Let me tell you the way the book of Romans is written. It's really neat. It's the most logical thing you've ever read in your entire life. We probably don't have the time, and I'm not a good enough teacher to do it. It's happened a few times kind of as a serendipity in my class, but when Paul will teach something, and he will draw a conclusion, and it will be a little, it'll be boiled down to a little kernel. He will say, therefore, whatever, a little short statement. And while we're sitting here trying to soak this in, and he took from 118 to 319 to make that, and then 320 is a conclusion. And while we're trying to soak that in, there are some questions that come to our mind. And those questions have to be answered. And guess what chapter 3, verse 21 is going to start doing? It's going to start answering the question that comes to your mind. It's really incredible how it happens over and over and over. It is the most logical presentation. He will make an argument. He'll draw a conclusion. That conclusion will lead you to say, well, if that's true, then what about, and guess what he's going to be talking about? Just what you ask. He's going to do that. And you'll see that if I'm able to teach it the way that it should be taught. Then you'll see, man, he just answered my question. Now, I'm going to say I'm not smart enough and I'm not wise enough to answer all of your questions, and I can't plumb the depths of Romans 1 through 8. I've been working on it for a little while, but I can't plumb the depths of it. There are a couple of sections I've just, or doesn't matter to anybody, I've been asked to write a commentary two different times on the book of Romans, and I won't do it because there's two sections of Romans that I don't want to go down and print, because once you go down and print, you got to defend it for the rest of your life, you know. So I want to be able to change my mind on it. I want to be able to learn some more on it. So I haven't done that. And I'll tell you when I get there, okay? There's a couple of sections that I still know that there's a lot more in it than I'm able to fit into it. So we've got some definitions. We've got law, sin, gospel, justification. And we're ready to go into a text here, 118 to 320, and I'm always ready to go into a text whenever it's time to quit. There are two ways a man can be made righteous. One of them is by keeping law, and that's what we're going to be looking at. We've discussed the question, the first question there, if Jesus Christ had never come to this earth, would man be lost or would he be saved? How many of you read through 118 to 325 times this week? Good. Thank you. I hope you'll do that again. Or if you read five times, you can just read three this time. If you hadn't read it five times, then read it five times. Okay? But let's read this section, and that's exactly as obvious that somebody has. Ms. Marsh has read it, because this came to her mind. How does chapter 2, verse 6 fit into what I'm saying there? So I appreciate you reading that. Let me tell you, let's start out in 118. And I'm not skipping the introduction, verse 1 through 16, for any particular reason other than the fact that I know myself and I'm going to have a hard time getting through this section. Let's go back up and read 14, 15, and 16, just so we will have read it and made an observation. Paul will say, I'm obligated both to the Greeks and the non-Greeks, both to the wise and the foolish. This is why I'm so eager to preach the gospel to you who are at Rome. I'm not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God for salvation of everyone who believes, first the Jew, then the Gentile. And here's why. For in the gospel, a righteousness from God is revealed. This is why it is available to the Jew and the Gentile. Because it is from God. A righteousness that is by faith. If it was from the law particularly, it wouldn't be for the Gentile, would it? But he says it is from God. It's for the Jew first, then the Gentile. For in the gospel, a righteousness from God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last, just as it is written, the righteous by faith will live, or will live by faith. So that's the introduction, and here's you a real quick sermon. You probably have heard it before. Three I ams in verse 14, 15, and 16, and they all build on one another. First, he says, I'm obligated. And because of that obligation, here's the second I am. I'm eager to preach the gospel. And because he's obligated, because he's eager, then the third one, I'm not ashamed. You will be ashamed if you don't feel the necessity of preaching the gospel. You won't preach it. And you won't talk about it. But if you ever understand that a man apart from Jesus Christ is lost. Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father, what? Except by me. That's what he said. I didn't say that. He said that. He said that. And we're getting to the point that even sometimes people that call themselves Christians don't really believe that. Our tolerance is paying off for some people in this world. Jesus said, I'm the way. Any man that tries to get into the sheepfold, except through me. I'm the door. Any man that tries to climb over the wall, that comes any way, tries to get into the sheepfold, except through me, the same as a thief and a robber, he said. He said that. I didn't say it. He said it. And I believe it. And so I'm obligated, and I'm eager, and I'm not ashamed. And we can go to the end and ask ourselves, are we ashamed? Do we talk to our friends on the job about Jesus Christ? Or do we find it convenient not to? And when you do that long enough, you'll get to the point where you'll say, I'm okay, you're okay. And we will have lost what Paul said at the very beginning. We'll have lost our obligation. And consequently, we will have lost our eagerness for the gospel, and we'll want to talk about all kind of things other than the gospel. And we like little platitudes and little stories. But we'll talk about anything and everything other than the gospel in our churches. Because we're not convinced that man's lost apart from it. And I'm looking at people that I know. I know that struggle. And I know how hard it is to say, but I'm saying if you don't say it, you're not going to progress. If you don't admit that and understand that. If you hold out some hope for a person being saved, a person of sufficient age and mentality to be held accountable for their actions, if you hold out some hope for them to be saved apart from Jesus Christ, you do not understand the gospel. You don't understand the purpose of it. There is no name under heaven, given among men, say, there's just one. There's just one gospel. And it is imperative that people in the world hear it in order to be saved. And apart from it, they're lost without hope. That's what Romans 1:18 to 3:20 is going to discuss. And so we'll stop right there. I have to get our bell guy because I need bells. But anyway, thank you. We'll pick back up there next week. Thank you.